I don't know how many people would happily exchange a career in fashion design for teaching at an inner city school, but that's exactly what Laurel M. Sturt did in 2002 when she decided to become an elementary school teacher at a school in the South Bronx. Ms. Sturt has spent over a decade in the public school system, challenging policies and campaigning for changes in the ways things are done. In her memoir, Devante's Inferno, 10 Years in the New York Public School Gulag, she shares her experiences as a teacher and her ideas about what she calls the civil rights issue of our time, the right to a decent education. It's published by Northea Press, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Laurel Sturt to our show today. Hello.
Thank you for having me.
What were you doing in the fashion industry?
Oh, I had a company with my ex-husband, and we made accessories and things mostly out of leather. We sold to Saks, Bergdorf's, Neiman Marcus. We had a nice little business there.
And were you even considering going into teaching while you were doing that?
Well, I had always been an activist. The situation of the haves and have-nots had always bothered me. And as one of the haves, I felt a responsibility to help people who need it. So I used to tutor and things like that outside of my work. But ultimately, I wanted to flip the equation and do it full time.
Well, did you have to get a teaching degree? I mean, aren't there tests that you have to take to teach in the schools?
Well, I decided I had to decide what I was going to do. So I believed I could do the greatest good by helping to educate poor kids, since education is the key to escaping poverty. And education anyway is so important to the future of our country. So when I saw an ad on the subway for New York City teaching fellows, then I understood that's what I was supposed to do. And it's a program where the city gives you your master's degree for free, but you have to get it while you're teaching in a high-need school for 2 years. You have to commit.
And you were teaching what subjects?
Well, I started out teaching English language arts, which is reading and writing, but then a new principal came in the second year I was there and discovered my resume, which is a lot of art and design in the background and also art history, and so made me the art teacher. And so after that, for 10 years, I was the art teacher.
Well, isn't that a rarity in an inner city school? As I understand it, ever since principals have been given the control over the budgets, they have decided to put their money into teaching to the test and eliminated art and music programs in their schools.
Indeed.
Especially in the inner city schools.
Yes. Well, when I got there, there wasn't an art or music program. But a new principal came in, and he was very arts-oriented. And also, there were very good times starting economically then. We were recovering from 9/11. There was plenty of money to give me art supplies and things like that.
Now, your first principal is the woman you called Satana?
Yes.
What was wrong with her? I mean, why was she truly linked to the devil in your mind?
Well, she was, that's what the staff would refer to her as. She was a very strange and vicious person. And unfortunately, Bloomberg has empowered principals with utter power and absolutely no accountability, not unlike himself, by the way, in the way he was running the schools.
Well,
and she could just ruin people's careers. She could just choose not to like somebody and get rid of them, and all sorts of teachers were laid waste by her.
And then she left, as you said.
Then she left for a better job.
And her replacement, who you seem to have appreciated more, you also describe as somebody who socialized with some of the cute young teachers on Friday nights.
Now,
that's
is that
acceptable?
Euphemism. It went a little further than that. But that person left after 2 years because there was a cheating scandal, a test cheating scandal. And he resigned before he was brought up on charges, charging him with not only facilitating the cheating, but covering it up.
Well, you started working in education just as President Bush's No Child Left Behind law was enacted in January 2002, and it's been claimed that since it places emphasis on test scores, that encourages teachers and school administrators to cheat on tests.
Absolutely. It's been a problem everywhere, even in the vaunted Michelle Rees district of Washington, D.C. There are all sorts of allegations, investigations, cover-ups, things of that nature. The Atlanta superintendent was convicted in March.
You called Michelle Rees, who ran the Washington, D.C. schools from 2007 to 2010, the number one war on teachers criminal. Wasn't she praised by both Senator McCain and President Obama during the 2008 election campaign?
Yeah, unfortunately, this is a bipartisan attack on the schools. It's what is passing for reform. I mean, I can only say reform in quotes. I consider it an attack. They've been sold a bill of goods.
You were teaching in South Bronx?
The north part of that. I mean, not technically what's known as the South Bronx, but a very high poverty neighborhood in the Bronx.
You mentioned about 40% of the students were English language learners. That means
yes.
English was not their first language?
Right.
Were they capable of reading and writing and speaking in English at all?
Only a few. I mean, that brings up another crazy Alice in Wonderland kind of mandate there over the testing. After 1 year in the country, those kids are required to take the same tests as everybody else. And our school was rated on those scores, and now teachers' livelihoods depend on those scores. And I wasn't allowed to teach at their level. I had to teach those kids fourth grade level, even though they couldn't speak English.
Didn't you have a warning when you first showed up and you found out that you had no closet or locker of your own?
Yeah, the third world infrastructure is very much in force. It was just shocking.
From the start, you had issues with the summer schooling system. You started off by teaching summer school. What was wrong with summer school?
Well, summer school is very easy, and it was, at the time at least, it was passable by just showing up.
Mere attendance. It didn't matter whether you did well or not?
Right. Mere attendance could get the child to the next grade. And what I found out in that first, that was part of my 5 weeks training, which is a baptism by fire and woefully inadequate. They're doing that now with Teach for America people.
Well, we mentioned.
Go ahead. The kids didn't know anything. I was in a fifth grade class. They didn't know their times tables. They didn't know just general stuff that we take for granted.
So you just promoted them?
Yeah.
I mean, but that was the school policy?
That's the system policy.
Well, what happens when they reach a certain point where they are tested, and it turns out that they don't know their times tables?
They fail the tests, and then but they're
are they left back then?
Well, Bloomberg said there was be no social promotion, but in fact, very few kids are left back. In fact,
well, you arrived, as I said, just as No Child Left Behind was being implemented, but also Mayor Bloomberg was implementing his changes to the New York public school system. How did the changes that he implemented affect you and your school?
Well, the first thing I noticed when I got there, even the first day of school, was that the kids were grouped for what's called cooperative learning, which is part of an educational pedagogy, which is about kids constructing their own learning. It's called constructivism, and they're supposed to, where it's less of a teacher lecturing as we had in school and more of the kids constructing their own learning from each other. But
that sounds like a good idea.
It does sound like a good idea, and it works nicely when you have a population of children who do not have behavior issues and have prior knowledge and can focus. But when you have children grouped at a table in any other place to play cards and you're trying to teach them, do you think they're looking at you? No, they are not.
My guest is Laurel M. Sturt. Her book, Devante's Inferno, 10 years in the New York public school gulag. We'll get to why you call it a gulag. Well, beginning teachers have problems maintaining discipline.
It's true.
Is it worse in a school like the one you were teaching in?
Most definitely, because these kids come to school with a condition called toxic stress. And it's been researched by a pediatrician at Harvard who's been actually pushing for federal laws and things to address this situation. It's where the brain is actually rewired from the stress of growing up in poverty. And we had kids who were homeless, kids who were up all night, kids who didn't come most of the time, kids with parents in prison, kids with drug addicted mothers, name it, we had it.
Was this the sort of thing that the other teachers talked about when they got together?
Yes. We all talked always about how difficult it was.
How did they respond when Mayor Bloomberg changed the makeup of the entire Board of Education, changed the structure
and took mayoral control? Well,
was there a feeling, at last somebody's going to take control and fix things?
I came in just as that was happening, and so I wasn't there before that. But I do know that the school board that existed before that was Byzantine and corrupt and just considered to be pretty useless. And everybody had their hopes that mayoral control would solve all of that, including Bloomberg, who saw it as a quicker, accountable. One person would be accountable. But the problem with that turned out to be then that he became a dictator, and the one entity that could counter him, which is the Panel on Educational Policy, he stocked it with his appointees. And in one case, when two of them didn't vote the way he wanted them to, he fired them on the spot. And so you were getting a rubber stamp all through his years with mayoral control. And by the way, mayoral control in general has not worked in any city.
Now, he has closed down some underperforming schools. The school you were at sounds rather underperforming. Was it ever in danger of being shut down?
Yes. In the last couple of years, it didn't make AYP adequate yearly progress. But it was one of hundreds. And they get special supports from the government when that happens. We got more money for after-school programs and things like that. But that's superfluous. That kind of money is superfluous in a situation where it's poverty that has to be addressed.
But is the situation you were describing why you say the atmosphere in the school had an almost Darwinian feel to it?
Yeah.
We're talking survival of the fittest?
Right. For the kids and the teachers. I mean, because there were no resources and everything was scarce. And people are terrified of losing their jobs because of the low test scores and things like
that. Even the veteran teachers?
Them more than anybody, because it's almost like they've gotten used to the whole patriarchal system of the pension, the everything that goes with it, which is understandable. And the younger ones had a wider view of the life's potentials, and that you could, if you didn't like it, leave.
A big issue in the current mayoral campaign is the role of charter schools in the current system, something that the mayor has encouraged and the two candidates disagree on. What was the feeling of you and the other teachers about charter schools? Was there a charter school located within your school building?
No, but that would be a big problem, because when there are co-locations, they crowd out the existing school, and they're usually heavily funded by philanthropies and hedge funders and people like that. And what that means is you'll have the haves and have-nots within a school.
Did the financial crisis in 2008 affect the atmosphere of the school?
Oh, yes, because of all of a sudden there were never a lot of resources, but then there were like none. I mean, I think last year I got a pack of pencils for the entire year.
You requested to teach either pre-K, first or second grade, when you finished your first school year, because you had taught older kids, fifth graders. Could they get rather aggressive?
Yes, they were light years ahead of where we were when we were kids. When we were in fifth grade, we were far different than the fifth graders are now. They're very sophisticated, and they're physically sophisticated, and the, you know, lots of eye rolling and lots of surly adolescence in the fifth grade. Plus, quite a few have been held back. So then you have the older kids. And also, the thing about kids is I noticed there's the magical time up until the age of seven. And I really could see it teaching art, where if you give them a project, they'll do their best and they'll draw with abandon. But after that age, and that's also the age when they believe in Santa and the Easter Bunny and everything, and it's very charming, but after that, then they start to question themselves.
Well, it sounds like it was pretty tough for you, and yet you persisted.
Yeah, well, honestly, I did love the kids. I still do love the kids. I love the kids.
The kids who you can connect to.
Yeah. Well, even
well,
the,
now you're teaching,
you know,
younger children.
Even though the difficult ones are, you know, can make your hair turn white, when you get them alone and you sit with them, they're fabulous. They just want attention.
You had actually four principals in the 9 years at
yeah.
the school?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Is that typical, that kind of turnover?
Yeah, in a high-need school it can be, yes.
Is that because of burnout or because of what you described, some principals cross the line?
Yeah, there's a shortage of principals.
You go ahead.
And so they're looking for them all the time. And one of Bloomberg's initiatives was to put principals in that had absolutely no education background. It was all about business, the business model.
You also say that teachers suffer from oppressive micromanagement?
Yes.
From the principals or elsewhere?
Well, it's coming from Bloomberg through the DOE to, you know, down. Like I told you, that we had to seat them facing each other. And we loved it when there was a state test. We could separate them and put them in rows as we had learned as kids, facing the front, because then they weren't talking to each other.
You're still using Delaney cards?
No.
I have to ask you about the title and subtitle. What does Devante's Inferno refer to?
Well, of course, Dante's Inferno, but Devante is a common name.
Uh-huh. So it was
and
one
we
of
had
the
a
kids?
Child. We had children named that name. I did change the names of the kids in the book to protect privacy, but it's a common name in that neighborhood. And I wanted to illustrate the gulag part of it is... what a gulag it is for the teachers to have the joy drained from their inspiration, which is teaching, and their passion. And it's a gulag for the kids being subjected to test prep and testing all the time instead of an authentic, rich education.
Well, if you don't test, how do you know how well the kids are doing?
I think it's fine to test, but I think that teachers should make those tests the same way we had them when we were kids, because the teacher knows what was taught and can best create the test. But, by the way, if you look back, the only thing that approaches a standardized testing that we had was the SAT. And now teachers are
well, teachers, we had the Regents tests.
Right. Teachers' careers are on the line now based on how kids do on those tests. I mean, I can't imagine blaming my teachers for how I did on the SATs.
We don't have much time left, but would you like to be made chancellor of the schools?
Oh, yes, I would.
And then you'd change a lot of stuff, right?
I would. Arts.
Laurel M. Sturt, S-T-U-R-T, her book, Devante's Inferno, 10 Years in the New York Public School Gulag. It is published by Notia, and I want to thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.